Welcome to episode 13 of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. I am Ryan, your host, and I am incredibly excited for today's episode. After months of trying to get this guy back on the show, we were finally able to do it. And that is from the band Silver Snakes, Mr. Alex Estrada. What's going on, Alex?
How you doing? I'm sitting here watching a Dodger game while we talk, so feeling pretty good.
That's good. So you can multitask. That's good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thank you for being on the show again. Yeah, I think this is we were just talking a little bit before the recording. I think this is like the third incarnation of, you know, what we were going to try to collaborate on again.
Yeah.
That's okay. We finally made it, and this turns out to be a pretty good like we said, a pretty good. These are two good releases for us to talk about. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is the new EP from Silver Snakes, and that EP is called Scathe. So Al, I think I'm just gonna let you talk about it. You know, tell me about the impetus of it, and then after that we can talk about what's going to be up next for Silver Snakes and stuff.
So Scathe is it's an EP that was kind of thought up a few months ago. It was thrown on the table by a few people, you know, like management, and we did this show early in the year with the band Night Versus, where both of our bands combined together into this, you know, you quote unquote super group of sorts for this private like music industry event that happened out in Hollywood, mm-hmm. as bougie as that sounds. And we were asked to do some cover songs. Basically, each mm-hmm. of our band would perform a few songs, and then members would combine and we'd cover a few songs together. Okay. So like most things, I feel the need to have complete control of everything when it comes to anything I do musically. So mm-hmm. I immediately start going down lists of songs and bands I like and bands I think we could pull off. And mm-hmm. there's a couple no-brainers in there. And I'm like, you know, trying to think of bands that we have, you know, something in common with, in us and Night Versus, that is. And, you know, they're more on like the proggy tech side of things, mm-hmm. more so than we are. And, you know, but there's a few common bonds there. I think we both like the Deftones a lot. Mm-hmm. We're all roughly the same age. We all grew up on like the Smashing Pumpkins and like, you know, we're all Nine Inch Nails fans and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. Those were a couple no-brainers. We're like, you know what, let's do a Smashing Pumpkins song. We could do a Nine Inch Nails song. And then I was really pushing to do this Tears for Fears song. Mm-hmm. And, no one was really into that idea. And then the Nine Inch Nails song I wanted to do the song Into the Void off the Fragile.
Oh, right.
Just cause I thought that would be so cool. Cause there's so many layers in that song, and having, you know, eight people on stage, I feel like it would be something, you know, real different, mm-hmm. but we ended up doing that. We're in this together now.
Oh, okay.
And, from the Pumpkins, we did Ava Adore, mm-hmm. and, you know, arranging them was real easy. We did them very true to the originals. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was pretty successful, that whole show that we did. You know, there's a video of it online somewhere, and like Jason from Let Live came out and sang some of the stuff with us, and mm-hmm. The idea got thrown out there, like, why don't you guys record a few cover songs? You don't have anything else going on right now, just so we're not like, you know, sitting on our hands, let's do something. Mm-hmm. So it was thrown out there, like, why don't you cover a Pumpkin song, why don't you cover a Nine Inch Nails song? And it's like, you know what, those are too obvious. You know, those are like two of my favorite bands, and the last thing I want to do is cover my favorite bands, and because mm-hmm. I'm not going to want to change anything about it, you know?
Right.
So for months and months, we're just thinking of what we can do. And, you know, I'm into so much weird music, and I'm just throwing out these like these crazy 80s songs that no one's ever heard of, and then these more like obscure songs. And I wanted to, I go through a lot of musical phases as well. So like at one point, I'm also self-admittedly, I'm last to the party with a lot of music. I'm like, I discover stuff 20 years after everyone else. So I think maybe like 6 months ago, I heard The Cult for the first time in my life and it like changed my world. I heard like Fire Woman or something, and I'm like, this is the greatest rock song of all time. Like, how have I never heard this? So I'm like telling the band, like, we got to cover this song. This is it. And then, you know, they all watch the video and they're like, you want us to do this like hair metal song? And I'm like, no, it's a little different. You know, they weren't a hair metal band. They're a little darker than that. But, you know, looking back on it now, I'm like, I'm so glad they didn't let me do that, because there's no way I would have been able to, you know, pull something like that off. Right. But, you know, I wanted to do like a Killing Joke song, a Filter song. The one we agreed on early on was Garbage. We wanted to do the song Vow by Garbage. Mm-hmm. And that changed. We ended up doing Number One Crush, which mm-hmm. most people know from the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack, which I feel like is such an iconic movie of the 90s for people our age. So that's one of those songs when people, you know, if you don't know what the name of that song is, you sing the first line, like, I would die for you thing, and mm-hmm. people know it right off the bat. And so then we picked that one. We got that down. Then I really wanted to do the Sisters of Mercy song called When You Don't See Me. Mm-hmm. And we planned on it. But, you know, I had it laid out. And when it came down to it, we would have been covering it exactly like the original, only I'd be singing it like an octave higher, since I can't sing as low as him. So mm-hmm. that kind of seemed like a waste of time. So we thought of something different. So we had Garbage down. And then Ministry, we're like, cool, let's do a Ministry song. Now, we're kind of weird, and all of us collectively, like, we're bigger fans of, like, really old Ministry before a lot of the stuff that people would think that we're into, you know what I mean? So people would probably think we're in, like, Stigmata era Ministry, you know, but, like, I love Twitch, and, like, I love their real dancey, poppy 80s stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would have loved to do a song like All Day or Every Day is Halloween or something like that, but that's like us trying to cover Depeche Mode or something, where it's just like, you don't do that. You don't do a stylistic shift that much, because it's never going to be as good as the original. So, you know, the song, I was listening to the records and I heard Burning Inside off of The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste. So mm-hmm. I heard that song. It was super upbeat, and it kind of sounds, if you listen to it, it sounds like a precursor to something like Wish that Nine Inch Nails did. Mm-hmm. It has like that shuffle to it, or even like Gave Up, just the stuff like Nine Inch Nails was doing on like, on Broken. Mm-hmm. So it had a really cool feel to it, and you know, we laid out the cover, and I wrote some parts for it, and it sounded great, but it sounded just like the original. So we cut it in halftime, we slowed it down, we fucked it up, we made it real dirty, real nasty. And again, we're very early into our career as a band that's shifting into the style, you know what I mean? We've been doing just like the riffy rock thing for years. And it's only been about 2 or 3 years now that we've been experimenting with more electronics and synths and sampling. Mm-hmm. So this EP was the first time that from start to finish, we programmed everything ourselves. We did all the sampling ourselves. We did all the sound design ourselves. And it was completely self-produced. You know, usually like I'll record the records then, because I don't trust myself to do anything with my own band when it comes to mixing, because I'll end up mm-hmm. like, you know, you see those memes of like a skeleton sitting at a desk and it just says like the mix is almost done. Like that would be me. So it took a lot for me to take this on to mix. So yeah, you know, getting back to it, we did the Ministry song, and then the last one, you know, we're struggling to find a third song, and then turned on the radio and I hear Come Undone by Duran Duran, and immediately got like a visual of the music video of them in these like puffy white shirts playing at some kind of aquarium like SeaWorld or something. It's so such a strange video. There's like a mermaid in it. They're all dressed like Shakespeare. And that's my oldest memory of MTV, is seeing that video on probably around like 93 or something. I was like 7, maybe 6 or 7 years old. And I would never say Duran Duran is a massive influence on this band, because I've never really gone through their catalog. But the fact that that's my oldest memory of something as iconic as MTV, you know, which is a pretty important part to those born in the 80s, you know, to say the least. I just figured that'd be cool. And I never heard anyone else cover that song. Mm-hmm. And it had such a cool structure and such a hooky chorus. I'm like, you know what? We can really lay this out in a cool way where it would be different. And like, I could see this as like a single. At the time, I was listening to a lot of Marilyn Manson and a lot of Mechanical Animals. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you could hear so much of that, of like that Mechanical Animals era Manson in that cover, which is super cool for me. That's like a tribute to his music, you know, to that songwriting of him and Twiggy of that era. So we did those. We wanted to put a new song on it, so I wrote Follow Your Lead, wrote that song real quick. It came together really nicely, and we started playing that song on tour. It was going over real well, which gave us that like confidence boost, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, we wanted to do one more track since we were going to do a fourth cover, but we couldn't really decide on one, so we're like, let's do a remix. And Garrett, our drummer, and I have been the ones predominantly working on the electronic stuff, and he has this project called Nexialist, which is mm-hmm. a solo project of his that's all like industrial metal, like kind of EDM sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, me and him met up in the studio. He had like a skeleton for a remix, and me and him work well together. It's insane how I just sit there, and he's so far ahead when it comes to like the computer stuff than I am when it comes to the electronics. Mm-hmm. So something that would take me 45 minutes to program, say a verse into a chorus, he could do in like 20 seconds with just shortcuts. Yeah. So we go to my studio, plug in, I sit there and I'm like, all right, play it. All right, throw the kick on the first and the third. All right, let's fuck this up. Put a filter here, do this, let's stutter these vocals. And, you know, it just works so well. And more than anything, you know, we're really proud of this EP. It's a digital release. Like, I'm kind of bummed it's not physical, but there's so many hoops to jump through when you're covering songs. And yeah. That's a whole other side of it I don't even want to get into, because I will have like a panic attack if I even start thinking of that stuff again. Right. Because that's been the biggest nightmare of my adulthood, is trying to deal with the publishing involved in putting out cover songs. So yeah, you know, it was a big confidence boost to have this EP come together as well as it did, play it for our friends. Everyone really liked it. The mix came out great. It's my favorite mix that I've ever done. And I've been, you know, producing music for 12 years at my studio. Mm-hmm. And, to tackle something this different and to be happy with it, which is very rare of me to be happy with something my own band puts out sonically. You know, there's always, I wish I would have done this tone different, or I could add to this beat, but I have no regrets about this mix, which is awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that was, you know, from a label standpoint and a management standpoint, this is like a transitional release to just get us from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And, being our last record, Saboteur, to our next release, which will be next year, just something in the meantime. But to us, this was just a way to really test the waters and to make sure we can do this, you know, like we have all these big ideas, these ambitious ideas that we really want to tackle in the next year. And, you know, budget is a concern and, mm-hmm. you know, all those things. So being able to get this done completely on our own. Yeah. It's just that boost that we needed, and we're real proud of it. And I'm really excited for this record to come out tomorrow. And I really hope everyone hears it. You know, it's not, mm-hmm. it's not a huge release. It's not some big vinyl release. So I don't know if it's going to get the real PR push that I think it deserves, but, mm-hmm. I hope that word spreads, you know, like this band covered these cool songs. You remember this one, check it out. So we're doing our best to spread the word on our own. We're not really counting on anyone else to do it for us at this point.
Right. Right. Well, it was funny because when I first saw the names of the tracks on it, it didn't come to me right away that, mm-hmm. that the, you know, the songs besides Follow Your Lead and the remix at the end were covers. It was just kind of like, you have that sort of, like subconscious, like bells are going off thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's funny. Those titles are familiar, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And then when I heard them, I'm like, oh, I'm like, that's really cool, you know? And, so I was really excited about that, because I feel like a lot of times when you get EPs from bands, you know, the majority of the time it's just kind of like, you know, here's these three or four songs that we sort of, you know, that we sort of had that didn't go anywhere, and we're going to try to rework them, or, you know, it can kind of, you know, I feel like it can really go either way. It can be really positive sort of thing, like, you know, like what you guys have done, you know, where you said it's a really good transition, or yeah. It'd be just something that kind of like goes nowhere. But I really think, especially when I think about how Saboteur, you know, really was, you know, where you started introducing those electronic elements a lot into the sound. And I feel like this release, this EP is like the logical sort of next step as far as a transition, you know, into an even more, you know, electronic sort of influenced or bass sound. So I think, yeah, I think like as far as that progression, it's definitely, because I one of the things that always bothers me is like when bands will like sort of overshoot the runway, when they'll kind of like leap too far in one direction.
Yeah.
From one release to the other, and you sort of, you know, sometimes it works out, but other times you just kind of It's just, it, like I said, it's just kind of too far and you can't really like wrap your head around it, but,
totally.
But I feel like it's very organic, you know, in the case of, you know, from Saboteur to Scathe. And then, you know, it just makes me now excited for, for what's going to come next.
Yeah. Us, I mean, we've been writing for a next record for a while now. We're full of ideas. So like I said, this EP has been a real confidence boost. It's not even out yet and we're already stoked for the reaction. I mean, some people have heard the singles. We put out Come Undone a few days ago. The Ministry song came out today. And I think a lot of people, it's going to be a slow burn for this release for the most part, in my opinion, at least, because news is kind of just leaking its way out there. We don't have all these big press pushes for this, which would be ideal, but it's just, you know, it's not priority when it's a release on this scale. It's digital only, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're real excited for it. And more than anything, I think this release was for ourselves, you know, and they're bands we like, and especially like, out of all of them, Garbage is like one of my all-time favorite bands and one of the biggest influences on me, you know. I've been influenced by female singers more than anything my entire life. So Shirley Manson has been one of my favorites since I was a kid. And being able to do one of her songs has been, it's been a really cool experience. And we got Michelle from the band Iris, which is this amazing band from LA. It's I-R-E-S-S. Mm-hmm. They're incredible. I mean, the best way I could describe that band is like, God, her voice is so diverse. I mean, musically, it's kind of along that sludgy vibe of Chelsea Wolf. Maybe not as dark as that. A lot of those grungy elements. Mm-hmm. But her vocals, I mean, she has so much soul in her voice. And that's that one band that I've seen locally in the last, like, who knows how many years that's actually really blown me away. And I'll go see all their local shows when I can. And I really push that band. And we had her come in the studio and do that hook in Number One Crush, that really iconic haunting melody in the background.
Yeah.
Cause there's no way I was going to do it, you know? as it is, there's that really iconic female vocal in Come Undone that we didn't do. And I had to kind of weasel my way around it and come up with something, but we couldn't leave it out of that Garbage song. So, yeah, this record is dedicated to those bands. And, you know, if by some miracle they hear it, I hope they like it. You know, who knows if they will. Hopefully they just don't come after us pissed off that we did their songs. But
I would hope not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Shirley seems to be pretty active on social media with the Garbage stuff. So when it's out, I'm just going to like DM her a link to it or something and just see if she hears it, because that'd be really cool. But yeah, we tagged Ministry in a bunch of it. And as for Duran Duran, I don't even know how to get a hold of them. I would love to, like...
I think they're Australian, right?
I don't know anything about that band. Like, I'm not even going to pretend to. I'm such a poser when it comes to that. I feel like the dude that's wearing the shirt of a band I've never heard. Right. But that song that we did, Come Undone, actually does have meaning to us. You know what I mean? So, yeah. There's something there. There's a respect there. And I've been digging deeper into their catalog, and there's some really cool stuff in there from way before that era, which I'm really into. So I'm excited to discover some new stuff. And I've been watching live videos of them lately, like from 2017 of them playing that song, and they still sound incredible. So
yeah. Yeah. That's always that, because there's so many bands that have been around for years that are, you know, coming back together and doing tours and everything. And they just like, you just want to be like, stay home. Like, why are you bothering? You know, like,
yeah, totally.
Like, I saw a video from like, I think it was like a Guns N' Roses show. And I mean, maybe it was just a bad night, but I was like, yeah, if I paid money to go see that, I would be pretty upset, you know.
Before every big show I go to, I watch videos online. And that's, and that's like, I hate it. And I don't want to sound all like pompous about it. Like I got to approve of their live show. Cause you know, being in a touring band, like we have our off nights too. Like I hope people haven't judged us by our live videos sometimes. Cause you know, there's always something, but with these bigger bands, there's some bands that I truly love that I've gone to see and it's really ruined it for me.
Yeah.
And, being someone that works in music, working at a recording studio, any engineer or producer will tell you it's really hard to enjoy music the same way as a casual listener. You're analyzing every aspect. So, you know, I'm not going to drop names, but I mean, I've seen some of my favorite bands. I saw one of my favorite heavy bands ever about 5-6 years ago for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I was standing side stage and just watching the way their drummer hit his snare drum. Just the fact that he didn't hit like rim shots the way that I would like him to. Mm-hmm. And the way it sounded on their record, I was like, this dude has like a weak wrist. Like, there's no way. This is studio magic. This band is not what I thought they were. And same thing, you know, bands, when people hype, you got to check out this band. There's, you know, that's how I know when a band really isn't as good as people are making them out to be, is when the first thing you hear about them is they're so loud.
Yeah, right.
It's when someone's like, oh, you got to check out so-and-so. They're so loud. Cause then I'm like, all right, cool. So they suck, or yeah, so then I'll watch a video and I'm like, yeah, they're loud and they got, you know. It doesn't take a lot of talent to spend an extra $50 on a 100-watt amp versus a 50-watt amp, but you know, you got to get a drummer that could hold it down against that.
Yeah, that's like sorry, I mean to cut you off. I had been hearing about that band Nails for so long, and you know, everyone was just, you know, I felt like it was just like everyone that was talking to me was like doing their like Nathan Implosion expression, you know, from Metalocalypse. Everyone was just like, it's brutal, you know. And I'm like, all right, I'm like, fine, I'll listen to it. Like, and I have to say, like, that was the first time in a while where I was actually like, damn, this is like really heavy.
Yeah.
Like,
and live, it's really heavy.
Yeah. See, that's refreshing too. Cause yeah, I would love to, you know, to see them if they come around. And
I actually, I recorded their first record.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Todd, the singer, Todd Jones, he was also in Terror. He was in Carry On. He was in, you know, a lot of those really iconic bands. And he produced a record for this hardcore band called Creatures that I recorded back in like 2007 or something. Told me, hey, man, like, I like how filthy your shit sounds here. And I'm like, well, cool. Like, that's what I go for. Because I've always gone for like a real organic raw sound, especially with heavy bands in my studio. And he's like, yeah, I got this new project. I want to come record it. So we did a demo, and we ended up doing the whole first record, Obscene Humanity. We did that whole thing in my studio, and I have, like, incredible memories. That band has changed a lot since then. I feel like when he started it in that era, it was going to be just, like, a real pulverizing, raw, like, D-beat, almost, like, punk thing. Mm-hmm. And I think when they switched drummers, Tom, the drummer at the time, was in 108. Now their drummer, he's more of a metal guy. It's more of, like, a, like, I don't know if it's really death metal, but hardcore and metal background. He's an incredible drummer. The current drummer is incredible. And I think that really just changed the sound of the band. But man, that's, you know, getting back to it, if you get a chance to see Nails, that's, I'm wearing a Nails shirt right now, actually, which is really funny.
That is funny, yeah.
Yeah, they're the real deal. That is a heavy fucking band.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I was, like I said, it was kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy here. Like it's kind of like when people will tell me like, oh, watch this movie. Like, it scared the shit out of me. Like, I'm like, I watch it and I'm like, yeah, like, I'm almost desensitized at this point. So
yeah, exactly.
I sort of feel like the same way about a lot of, just a lot of like, you know, heavy music and stuff. And, but every once in a while, yeah, something will come out like that and make my ears perk up. And so.
You know what? That's what happened with Code Orange as well. That was one of those bands that when I first saw them, we played a show with them a few years ago, and it was like, all right, my ears perked up, and I'm like, it has to be that real filthy sort of thing. And it's funny because Kurt Ballou ends up recording all these bands, and I feel like, you know, it's because he's the best at capturing that. He can hear those sonic qualities that make your ears perk up and that really hit you in your right in like your sternum. And, yeah, it's awesome what he does with those bands. Cause even the new Chelsea Wolfe record, he recorded that thing and that record hits so hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a record that I have to, actually have to listen to. It's on the list.
It's cool, man. Troy from, Queens of the Stone Age played guitar on a few of the tracks and you could really hear his influence in there. So
that's cool. Yeah. When you mentioned Kurt Ballou, like I'm very excited for Converge's new album too.
Yeah, that's gonna be awesome. I haven't heard. I think there's a single out already, right?
Yeah, they released one of the songs off the album as a single, like, and it had like a B-side that wasn't another song on the album. It was actually a non-album track or whatever. And
cool.
Those were both really good. And then I think they might have released another one too. And I haven't really gotten a chance to check it out too much. But
awesome. Yeah, I gotta check that out. They're one of those bands, you know, that everyone's gonna cite Converge as an influence if you're playing any sort of heavy music. And we may be out of that sort of post-hardcore scene at this point, but you know, that's a band we could always go back to. Like, You Fail Me, man. Yeah. Jane Doe is one that hit all of us real hard, but I feel like You Fail Me was one of the angriest, most like desperate sounding records I'd ever heard to date. And I could still put that on, and it still just hits as hard, and it still brings out all those same emotions. So yeah, I'm really excited for everything they do.
Yeah. There's some bands that make you, I don't want to say they make you kind of worried or hesitant when they, you know, when they're putting out a release, but it's like with Converge, I'm like, they're not going to disappoint me.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So even if the sound, you know, changes a little bit, you know, it's not going to, they just always put out quality stuff. So that's great. Well, like we said, tomorrow, the new Silver Snakes EP Scathe comes out. Alex, I know I saw in one of your posts online, I mean, it's obviously going to be on all the digital platforms and stuff, right?
Yeah, it's mainly going to be a digital release. I don't know if it'll ever see a physical release, but it's going to be all over iTunes, Apple Music, you know, Tidal will have it, Spotify will have it, all those things. So,
all right, cool. Yeah, everybody definitely check out that EP, and we are actually going to take a short break here so we can play a track from that EP. It's the first song off of the EP, and it is called Follow Your Lead. So hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll be right back. All right, so moving on to the second part of today's episode, Alex and I are going to be talking about the new Marilyn Manson album, which just came out on October 6th, I believe, yeah, and it's called Heaven Upside Down, and I think this is a perfect release to sort of go along with the Silver Snakes EP that we were talking about before the break. Because I know, obviously, Alex, there's definitely a large Manson influence in a lot of the stuff that you do. And why don't you go ahead and give me and the listeners, you know, your overall sort of take and first impression of Heaven Upside Down.
Heaven Upside Down. All right. So I've been a Manson fan for, you know, as long as I could remember, like most people that really came up in the 90s listening to this kind of aggressive music. Mm-hmm. And I kind of fell off with them for a while. I was a big fan of Antichrist Superstar. Mechanical Animals is to date my favorite record he's ever done. It's my favorite. Mm-hmm. Kind of lost interest for a while. There's some cool stuff in between, but the last record, The Pale Emperor, was awesome. I thought that was such an amazing return. And his relationship with, I believe, Tyler Bates is the guitarist and the producer that's writing everything, has done really cool things with Manson and his whole style. Stylistically, the shift has been real cool. He has him singing in a different range, which really brings out his voice and brings out these other things. He's not doing that real, like, droney, low octave sort of thing he was known for back in, like, the Sweet Dreams days.
Right.
But yeah, that record set the bar real high for Manson stuff. And upon first listen of Heaven Upside Down, I heard the singles. The very first single that came out, which I think was We Know Where You Fucking Live. Was that it? Or
I think so. That was the first one that I saw, like, that had come out.
I think it was that one. I know Kill For Me came out right after. Kill For Me is the one that really grabbed me. Mm-hmm. I listened to that song on repeat for hours when it first came out, because I'm like, all right, if this is the style he's rolling with on this record, it's going to be a really cool contrast to the last one. Because the same, my only real criticism of this album is that you can tell it's the exact same personnel as the last record. You could tell it's just Marilyn Manson and Tyler Bates. And Tyler Bates comes from a mainly scoring background, from what I understand. He does all the music for, like, Sons of Anarchy, and that's how he met Marilyn Manson. He's a fantastic overall musician, great engineer, great producer. But I think when you have someone like Marilyn Manson that has such a history with his own sound, and then you bring someone new in, and my whole theory of how the process works is Manson telling him, like, hey, I want to do a record like this. And Tyler, using his expertise in scoring, it's the same as when a director says, hey, we need a scene with this kind of mood. So Manson says, hey, we need a record with this kind of mood. I feel that it was written with a structure, and, you know, which is a good thing, but I feel like each song has a very similar structure. Mm-hmm. The songs sound nothing alike, to be honest, but I feel like they have the same kind of, like, verse, chorus, hook, really easy to digest hook. This record, 100%, I think, has, like, crossover appeal, you know? Marilyn Manson, without a doubt, is, like, strip club music, and this record, I can see many dances happening to in the near future. it's gonna be a big hit at clubs. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think the record's awesome. It took me a few listens. I listened to it again today before we did this, and, like, Saturnalia is, like, one of my favorite songs on the record. Mm-hmm. Heaven Upside Down's cool. Tattooed in Reverse is cool. Mm-hmm. Tattooed in Reverse is probably my least favorite song on the record, but it does have a cool vibe to it. Manson said that Rihanna was a pretty big influence on this record, and I feel like, you know, when you hear that, you're like, yeah, sure, whatever, but you hear that song, and you're just like, all right, he wasn't lying. Sonically, though, Gil Sharon's playing drums on this record, as he did on the last one, and he was in Dillinger Escape Plan, for those who don't know him. He played on the record Ironworks.
That's right.
And before that, he played in, like, Fishbone for a long time. He has, like, that reggae background. And Manson, I mean, even if you go back to something like The Beautiful People, all his really big hits have been really, really much so driven by rhythm. You know, they're very rhythmic, and it has all, like, that kind of vibe. And if you listen to The Pale Emperor, almost every song has this, like, like, this really cool dynamic pumping feel to the rhythm. And this record isn't missing that at all, but this record also has much more of a polished sound. The drums have more of an edge to them. They're not as organic as the last record. The guitars are much more distorted on this record. The last record, they had more of, like, a dark bluesy tone. So, I think this one, it's a cool middle ground between The Pale Emperor and between Mechanical Animals. I think it's almost right in between those two records. which are my two favorites. So it's really cool. I need to listen to it some more. I mean, like I said, the only thing that I think that could have made this record a 10 out of 10 for me is if Twiggy Ramirez was involved. Mm-hmm. And that's because he wrote all those iconic Manson songs from the 90s. You know, he did Tourniquet. He did The Beautiful People with Manson. And I think that his writing style, if it was combined with Tyler Bates, I think it would have just made the most insanely awesome Manson record. You know, I can't think of a better combo. This is like back in the 90s when I kept telling everyone that I wanted Trent Reznor and Timbaland to work together. Or I really wanted Nine Inch Nails to do a song with Aaliyah because I just thought it would have been like the coolest combo ever. It's in the same vein as that. I think that Tyler Bates and Twiggy writing Marilyn Manson songs would be the perfect combination. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think the record's incredible. I think everyone needs to listen to it. It went to number two on the charts, which is pretty huge in 2017 for someone like Manson.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah, because I sort of had the same, like you said, you know, back in the days of Antichrist Superstar, I started to get into Manson. I mean, it was kind of like hard to ignore, no matter like what you know what type of music you were listening to, like what scene you were in. He was just kind of like, he was so larger than life that, you know, you knew somebody who listened to him, and then, you know, you'd sort of get exposed a little bit to the, you know, just to like the visuals and his whole aesthetic and everything. And it was kind of like almost overwhelming. And, so I did get into Antichrist Superstar. I was a little bit into Mechanical Animals too, but I think like my musical sort of tastes were just like shifting a little bit at that point. So I didn't necessarily get as much into Mechanical Animals as I did Antichrist Superstar. And then, you know, like you said, I feel like he kind of like fell off a little bit. You know, there's like two or three albums there in the middle that I couldn't really like name a song off of, you know. And but it was actually, you know, there were probably four or five people that kept telling me like, you need to listen to The Pale Emperor. Like it's,
yeah,
you know, it's, even if, you know, these are, you know, some of these people had been listening to him, you know, the whole time, and then others, you know, were just kind of in the same boat as you and I. And so I said, okay, like let me get back into it, because I did feel like, you know, his like persona and everything, like it's so, like I said, it is so large, so like larger than life and everything, that it was almost like inevitable that like it was going to become a little stale, you know what I mean? And I remember thinking when I put The Pale Emperor on, I'm like, okay, like is this gonna sort of win me back, or am I just gonna, you know, just gonna sort of fade back into the back of my like my record collection or whatever? And I was like, damn, I was like, this is actually really, really good. I mean, just the energy that was recaptured on that release, especially, like, it was interesting because, like you were saying, it's a very sort of dark, bluesy record, but at the same time, it still has that sort of like chaotic Manson energy. And I was very impressed when I listened to that, and it made me excited then to hear this new record.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really like about this new one, about Heaven Upside Down, is how it is very cohesive. Like there's definitely, and I think, like you said, I think that, you know, that has a lot to do with Tyler Bates, you know, just creating this sort of you know, atmosphere and aesthetic for Manson that he can kind of explore, you know, different, you know, a little bit different, you know, song styles and genres and everything. And but like I said, it feels cohesive. I mean, even though a track like We Know Where You Fucking Live is, you know, completely different in so many ways from a track like the title track.
Yeah.
It's still, at no point did I really feel like the record lost me at all. Like it definitely has, it's very cohesive. It has a thread that runs through it. And I do like, I like how the sound on this one, is definitely a little bit, like you said, it's a little bit harsher. There's like a little bit more, I feel like it's a little bit more industrial sounding.
Yeah, I get some of that. I wish that it had more electronics on it, but I think that the way they captured the drums on this one kind of meets in the middle. I think that there's more like sampled drum sounds layered on to Gil's drumming, which I think really brings out that extra sheen of like that polish, you know, and that's what was missing from the Pale Emperor. Not that it was missing. That record was made by that organic sound. You could tell everything was really acoustic drum wise and all the guitar sounds, like I said, were real bluesy, and even his vocal performances on that record were real bluesy, which I think Tyler Bates has even said in interviews that that's what he was going for. He got Manson to sing in a different range and realized that his voice worked in a different way in that register. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that, yeah, like you said, this record definitely has that harshness to it that's been missing. And but with Manson, again, like you touched on when you first started talking about it, he's one of those guys that he was never in a genre, you know, like when we were kids, it's just like, oh, do you like Marilyn Manson? And that's a question you could ask anybody. It's not like, hey, are you a goth? Do you like Marilyn Manson? Or like, you know, it's not something like that. It's like, I mean, for me, it was like, if I was wearing black, I got the little cholo kid next to me in class going like, hey, you're a rocker. Hey, you like Manson or not? Like, so that was my entire schooling experience. But, which it was like a no-brainer. It's just like, oh, you're a rocker? Oh, yeah, so you like Marilyn Manson. It's like, I mean, there was one point where I'm like, nah, man, he's too scary for me. Like, we could bond on that, but it clicked at some point.
Yeah, I can remember having certain friends who, you know, were like, they were the ones that were really, you know, they were trying to, you know, emulate Manson and just really, you know, got it, went full bore with the whole, you know, with that whole, like, 90s goth, you know, with the dress and everything. And but then I had other friends who didn't have leanings like that at all. Like I knew, you know, guys who played, like, you know, on the football team and stuff who loved, like, Sweet Dreams, you know, like,
so yeah, totally.
Like, he just had that ability to really, appeal to people on, like, a musical level, even if they weren't necessarily, like, too into the theatricality and everything and the sort of provocative nature, you know, of like a lot of his, just his stage presence. And
yeah, he's from a different time too, man. He's like, he was like actually terrifying to the mass public in the 90s. People were, you know, he would come out there in thong and rip pages out of the Bible and, you know what I mean? Be screaming from that podium at his shows with fire everywhere and just the things he would say. He was actually terrifying.
Yeah, and to be, I mean, you know, because I would, you know, I was like, this was like late middle school and early high school, basically, for me.
Yeah.
So to be at that sort of impressionable age, like, it really was pretty shocking, you know, to see some of those, like when, you know, I think it was like on the Video Music Awards, you know, where he did, like you were saying, you know, where he was like speaking from like the podium.
The podium, and he's like, how do you feel being in a like something full of assholes? Like, I will never. And then they cut into the beautiful people, and then they cut to like Brandy and Monica in the crowd, and they're just like horrified, you know?
What the hell?
So that's just like, it's something you don't see anymore. When's the last time, like, I mean, I haven't watched any one of those award shows in a long time, but I'm sure it's just like the Foo Fighters or something, which don't scare anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly,
they don't, there's nothing provocative like that anymore. But in part, it could be because we've seen it already. We saw it all with Manson. We plateaued, we peaked, we plateaued. And even now, like, I'm not shocked by anything he does, you know? When he started like this whole viral marketing thing for this record, and that, you know, that image that was floating around of him with like a decapitated like Trump that everyone was talking about online. And it's just like, oh, cool. There's a, like a music guy talking against Trump. Like, I could go outside and hear everyone talking against Trump. Like, you know, you got to go a little bigger with that. So
yeah, exactly.
Nothing he does is too provocative in my opinion anymore. So it's cool when you see him live, and he'll still bring out that big podium when he does all those old songs from like Antichrist Superstar. Mm-hmm. And, you still get, that's like a nostalgia chill that comes over you when he does something like that. It's not like, oh, this is so wild. It's like, oh man, I remember how this made me feel back in 1997 when I first heard it.
Yeah.
And, that's what he has going for him. Like, by no means is like Marilyn Manson with a grill and like a crunk, like, Ring. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
By no means is that Manson terrifying to me as the one was back in the 90s, but he's still putting out awesome music and he's still a musical genius in that sense. And he knows he could guide his career in such a smart way that you got to respect the guy. And, you know, I'm always going to follow his music. I'm always going to be interested in it. And like I told you earlier, it's had such a massive influence on the band, especially with this new EP and going forward with everything, because that dude could write the harshest song and still have a hook in the chorus, which is so hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that I noticed when I first started listening to the new record, it does seem like he is to an extent like being a little bit more provocative lyrically, I think, than he was on the Pale Emperor. And I mean, it could be just a matter of like if I went back and listened, you know, more closely to the lyrics on the Pale Emperor, you know, I'm sure there's instances in there too, but like there was just stuff that was like jumping out at me. You know, when I was listening to the new one.
Totally, because it's very obvious. All those things are like, they're even in the song titles. Like, the song titles, like, Jesus Crisis, Blood Honey, right. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Some of that, I kind of roll my eyes at it, and I'm like, dude, right. You can't, it's like saying a joke and then after being like, you get it? That's the joke. Right. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to make it that obvious, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But he's meeting in that middle ground to where I feel like Joe Schmo music listener can listen to this Manson record and be like, damn, this is hard. And like, mm-hmm. That's when he ends up with the same kind of fan base that he did in the 90s. He had the kind of kids that would beat him up. You know, I read his book so many times, and the kind of jocks that would beat him up when he was a kid were now at his shows. And it's like, you know what I mean? That's like a common thread amongst a lot of those artists, like Nine Inch Nails. And those are the dudes that like, they put up, you know, they were the guys in high school that, well, I don't know about Nine Inch Nails, but as far as Marilyn Manson, like, I feel like he was picked on and he had a really rough upbringing, but now, you know, he plays and all those types of people, those bros are at his shows and they're moshing and, you know.
That has to be a pretty surreal experience.
It's so strange, man. I mean, even for us, like, even for me sometimes, like, we'll be playing the crowds where I'm just, like, looking out there and I'm just like, man, I have so appreciate every crowd that's ever watched us, and at the same time I'm also very aware that I'm like, man, if this was high school or something like that, or like if this dude were wearing this like ridiculous like All Lives Matter shirt or something in the front row right now, if I ran into the dude in the street, we would not be friends. So right. It's like, yeah, we're very conscious of that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, when we were talking about the roll your eyes sort of song titles on Heaven Upside Down, I'm very glad that, because I read somewhere, this was actually just today or yesterday too, I read that, I guess like the working title of Heaven Upside Down had been Satan, like, you know, like the song itself, and I'm like, well, I'm really glad he didn't do that.
Yeah, I'm so glad he didn't. That's
that would have been really bad. Heaven Upside Down is one thing, it's like sort of, it's sort of like mysterious in a way, but
yeah,
sort of
those kind of, you know? Those real obvious puns and like plays on words are just so they had their time. You know what I mean? It's just, everything's been said already. I guarantee you all that stuff's been said. I mean, you don't need to write all your titles out as if you're saying a text message to someone. So it's like, I get what he's doing, but the songs speak for themselves and they hold their own. So no complaints.
Yeah. I also, Another thing too that I definitely like about this record too a lot is how it shows a lot of his influences like on its sleeve, but it does it in a way that's really, it's really respectful and not, you know, not like overbearing at all. Like, you know, I'll listen to a track like We Know Where You Fucking Live, and you know, I can hear like elements of Nine Inch Nails and I can hear elements of Ministry and but then if I listen to, you know, then it goes to a track like Kill For Me, and I'm like, okay, I can definitely hear, like, the Depeche Mode influence.
Yeah, totally.
Stuff like that. Like, that's really cool. Like, when somebody can do that, like, pretty seamlessly, like, I'm really, that's something that always impresses me.
And then the common thread through it all is you hear the strip club influence, which right. I'm going to reiterate is so, so prominent in this record. It's just, I'm telling you, it's like, it's... I tour a lot, man, so I'm very familiar with strip club music, and This is, like, every song I hear, like, it's funny. It's, like, a whole new thing I look out for. I'm like, how long is that song? What's the tempo? Man,
right.
Like, this is a good dance song.
Yeah. You're like, oh, Rihanna was an influence for that? Oh, that's definitely.
Yeah. I mean, if I could go to a strip club and never hear that Work, Work, Work song again, I'd be so happy if they could replace that with one of these Manson songs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there's always, like, the one girl who wants to dance to Manson and, like, stuff of that ilk, but, like, you know, you always, like, miss, you know, when she's on or something. Or, like...
See, that's – so I got to throw the shameless plug in there. There's a club in L.A. called Jumbo's Clown Room, and if anyone listening is in L.A. or visiting L.A., it is the greatest club in the country, and it's not a strip club. It's a bikini bar, so there's no naked girls there. It's the best because it has the best vibe. It's the size of a dive bar, which is awesome. The drinks are good and they're cheap, which is awesome. There's lots of street parking. The girls are all beautiful and they all dance to the best music. You got the girl that comes out and dances to like the 80s, like hair metal stuff. And then you get a girl come out to Typo Negative and a girl to Nine Inch Nails, Depeche Mode, KMFDM, Rammstein. Like it's,
oh, wow.
And everyone's, there's not like a creepy dude picking his belly button in the corner. Like everyone is just having a good time.
That's
so
cool, man. Yeah,
I feel like I had to throw that out there because I've spent the last three like Christmas days at this club, so I feel like I owe them a thank you. Like I have like my, you know, I have my rituals so far for like holidays where I go hang out with family for the day, and then the next day I'm just like, all right, I'm gonna go hang out with my friends and see my friends for now, and then I go to Jumbo's and meet my second family. So.
Right. And you know what? Like you were saying, it's a bikini bar. Like that's kind of cool. Like I would enjoy a place like that because it's like once you've been to either a topless bar or whatever, full nude, whatever, once you've been to those places like a few times, you know, it's just kind of.
They have their place. They definitely have their place.
Yeah.
I won't ever knock them, but I'm just saying the bikini bar vibe for those that are shy and a little apprehensive about the strip club thing, man, that Jumbo's is so awesome. So
that's cool.
Check it out.
Yeah,
so,
cool.
So this has been our review of Jumbo's Clown Room here on the
right. And maybe Maryland.
10,
yeah.
10 out of 10.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm glad you said that. So I think you mentioned before, but like if you were gonna rate Heaven Upside Down,
I would give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Okay.
And that's, the songs are awesome. Pale Emperor, easily I would give a 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
This record, it might grow on me. It might take a while. I might like it even more. But just because there is, I can't deny that there's like a cheese factor to this record,
yeah.
Albeit with like the titles or whatever, or just like the hooks in the songs, which I understand are there. At the end of the day, those are pop hooks, and I'm not a big pop music guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say I don't appreciate a good pop song. It's just that, you know, I want like the anger and the depth in there. I don't want the like, the thing that I can picture the bro next to me like singing along to, because
right.
Me and that dude aren't gonna have anything in common, and I'd rather just have Manson's anger back, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had it at 7 out of 10, so yeah, we were pretty close there.
Awesome.
I definitely like you said, the Pale Emperor definitely was strangely enough, it was like a return to form, but yet it was also kind of it was like its own thing, which was pretty cool.
Totally. Which I have to add, by the way, that the Dodgers just won, so we will be going to the World Series, which is being an LA band, which is a very big deal. So just want to shout out to the Dodgers.
Yeah, congrats to the Dodgers. Yeah. So.
Sorry.
You know, it's funny too.
Sorry to everyone from Chicago, but you guys are a hell of a team. You know, there's always last year.
Yeah. What are you gonna do? It was funny when we were talking before. You had said how, you know, we've gotten to a point where everything's been said and somebody like Manson, Manson's not really going to do or say anything that's really going to be as provocative as he was, you know, in the early stages of his career there. And, it made me think, it's funny because it made me think of the irony of, there was that song, I think it was called This Is the New Shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny because it seems like that's the point of that song. You know, like he's kind of saying, like, you know, everything's been said before. There's nothing left to say anymore.
Yeah.
So it's, I think that's kind of funny. You know, it's like it goes to show too that I think, you know, like he's definitely self-aware.
Totally.
That's great. So yeah, everybody go check out that new Manson record and make sure that you guys definitely check out the new Silver Snakes EP that is coming out tomorrow, which is called Scathe. It's a digital release. So, you know, go to iTunes, go to Amazon Music, Tidal. I know you mentioned a couple other there.
Yeah, it'll be on, you know, iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon will have it as well. It'll be all over the place.
Yeah, definitely. You guys go check that out. Definitely an awesome EP, and definitely worth your time and money. So, Alex, thank you so much for doing this.
No problem. Anytime.
Now that we're finally, you sure? Anytime.
we should touch on the fact that when we first started talking about doing this, we were gonna do the we're gonna do the Zao record.
Yeah, we were going to do Zao.
And then we were going to do the 18 Visions record.
18 Visions. Yeah, that was like in July or something.
Yeah, at this point, I feel like, yeah, it's been a while. We've missed out on a few, you know. I think we're going to do Africa by Toto.
I think it's
been a long time coming.
We were going to we're going to review Joy Division record or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but, well, hey, you know, like I said, I knew it was going to happen eventually, so. It's a matter of getting there. So, but yeah, thank you again for doing this. And, you know, by the time we do it again, I'm sure, you know.
Well, yeah, our double record will be out. And yeah, there'll be something to look forward to.
All right, cool, man. Well, like I said, I appreciate it. And that concludes this episode of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. I am Ryan, your host. And thank you for listening, everybody. Have a good night.